a show?
No!
No problem. Podcasts of your favorite FM Talk 106.5 shows are waiting for you right now at fmtalk1065.com. And never miss a minute of the best in local talk when you subscribe to FM Talk 106.5 on iTunes or Stitcher. It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, with reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
We are live from the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. It is FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. And we are here day two of the rodeo. Lots to talk about. And we'll get your input as well on the text line, 251-343-0106. As I say, each year when we do this show, my partner on this show, Captain Mike Ward, on location. That location is going to be somewhere out of Port Fouchon or Venice, like a lot of people. But we'll talk more about his experiences on next week's show. I'm the one that stays here close and gets to watch what's going on in the rodeo. As day two here and back, he joined us yesterday for Midday Mobile. Dr. Sean Powers, good to see you.
Hello.
And Dr. Marcus Dryman, Sharkus.
Good to see you.
Good to see you
as well. I respond to either.
Yeah, that's good. All right, so let's, and I want to get into, you know, a lot with y'all, but first of all, day one, now we're not halfway, but we're a third of the way through day two. What are you thinking, what you're seeing coming in? Just in all species, and then we can dive into.
Good catches. I mean, there's been a couple of years, past couple of years, where Friday was really slow, and this was steady. I think some of it had to do with the heat, that a lot of people came in at 10, 11, a little earlier than they usually do. But really good catches. You know, nothing gigantic on any of the leaderboards now, except for the sharks that Marcus will talk about. But all good quality fish that some of those spots will hold.
Well, okay. So, that's interesting that some of the spots are going to hold. And I want to get into kind of like when people have been coming back in and saying, they say we can pick species, or they, because you get a narrative. I weigh in fish with you. You get a narrative of not only here's a fish, but how the fishing was. Did they say, you know, size-wise, it might not be big, but was fishing good? Because sometimes, I mean, this is y'all are scientists. I'm just a guy. Anecdotally, you could have a couple spots that are just fantastic. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, even Friday of rodeo happens, and I don't know if it goes out through a telegraph through the fish or whatever, but they decide they're not going to bite at the same speed. Were people telling you fishing's been good in general, or what are you hearing?
In general, they've told us that fishing's good, and usually we can tell it from the speckled trout. And a nice, steady stream of speckled trout. Obviously, we don't see somebody who didn't catch speckled trout.
Sure.
But no, just consistently, and the guys we've talked to, you know, the uniform thing was, you know, the bite was early because it was so hot, and then they targeted other species after specks. But no, it looked consistent. We saw some nice flounder as well. That's always good for us to see as that stock recovers. One of the cool things, we don't have a category for it, but somebody brought in a 66-pound Kubera snapper, which looks like a big gray snapper on steroids.
That somebody took the fangs out of something else and put it. Those things are machines.
Yeah, the only thing we looked at a little bit is it a dog snapper or a Kubera? Because when it's a Kubera, they kind of, when they get that big, they lose that side patch on their operculum. But you can tell it's not a gray snapper or red snapper just because it looks like your dog's teeth.
Yes.
I mean, yeah. So that was really cool to see. We appreciate the angler bringing it in for an ID. But other than that, you know, nothing really gigantically unusual yet, because you know those all come from the deep drops.
Yes.
that folks are going out there. But I mean, consistently we've heard that fishing's good, but it's hot.
Yeah, it is hot. You know what, this will be self-serving because I got y'all in here. So what you said about speckled trout, so that's what I fished on rodeo, because I got to come and go, and I got to do inshore because I gotta be here a bunch. So we absolutely noticed that, you know, our fishing, where we fish with shallow water, it's an early thing for speckled trout. There's a certain point, And, it, you know, people say, oh, well, the sun gets up too high. But isn't it based on the oxygen levels, the dissolved oxygen in that water that pushes those fish out? Or is it that it's too bright for them to be in there? What's science say?
It's the actual stress of the temperature on them. They have a wide range temperature, but when it gets too hot, the bait are going to drop down, and they're going to drop down. Yeah, dissolved oxygen, a few other things drop as temperature increases, but it's usually just a response to the temperature. Because if you go to some of the deeper reefs or under the bridge or something like that, you can usually, depending on the tide, catch fish all day.
Sure.
But so it really is the actual stress of the high temperatures right now, particularly once we get into August, and the bait
dropping.
So
my idea that, like, you know, and sometimes it probably correlates, because when we get that kind of wind, we have some cloud cover that probably keeps temperature down. But I've always thought, hey, when that fish in shallow, in speckled trout fishing, when it extends, I think, okay, well, we get wave action, it's dissolving oxygen into there. Mm-hmm. From that, is that true or is that not?
No, the more wave action, the lower the temperature, definitely the more cloud cover. Now, cloud cover is a little complicated because you wouldn't have all the algae producing oxygen as much under cloud cover. But, you know, it really is the stress of the heat, and you can a 1 or 2 degrees Celsius or 3-4 degree Fahrenheit.
Yeah, thank you for
change,
the translation.
Means a whole lot. And Marcus is, I mean, it's even more dramatic with sharks. Sharks are very temperature.
Yeah, I want to talk about that because, you know, one thing you were talking about yesterday on the show is a lot of these big sharks are caught at night, right? And is that a function of their activity? Is it the function of where, you know, where the people are fishing for? I mean, do the sharks lay up during the day, Dr. Drummond? Like,
that's a great question. And, you know, it's kind of species specific. Some sharks have been described to be more active feeders at night, but that's not as clear as maybe we used to think. 30 years ago, we thought, well, sharks, you know, they're active at night and they're just pretty dormant in the day. And that's not really the case.
You see plenty of active sharks
all the time.
Yeah. It, 10 o'clock in the morning.
Exactly. So, honestly, I think a lot of it's just old habit. You know, I think guys that like to target sharks, they tend to go out at night. And I think that's just the way they've been doing it, and it works really well for them. And you can certainly get on big sharks that way at nighttime.
And we're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. We'll talk about some of the sharks that have already come in here and what folks can see when they come down to the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. All right, we'll go to the break, come back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors next. All right, so welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors Rodeo Edition, 93rd Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. And as always, we are glad to be back. It's a lot of fun hanging out here, watching everything that goes down. Starts with the Liars Contest and the whole way through the Cannon Shot tomorrow afternoon. And hopefully you get a chance to stop by and say hello. And we're also checking out the text line, 251-343-0106. And having these two scientists in the mobile command unit, it's important. So this first question here, gentlemen, although let me point out before this question is hit, the rodeo officials, that's who decides categories too. But they said, Killer Bees on the text line said, hey, why isn't there a category for the two species the Gulf Coast is known best for? Where's the biggest shrimp category and the biggest oyster category? Come in for the weigh-in.
The difference between a fish and a fisheries, I would say.
That's funny. That made me laugh. Yeah, we're talking sharks. And first of all, I guess we need to back up here and talk about what sharks people are bringing in, because there's not just any shark.
So over the years, the rodeo has really narrowed down the category for sharks, and I give them a lot of kudos for that. They're very forward-thinking and only bringing in the shark categories for populations that can withstand the harvest. And so for this year and the past several years, there's a category for bull sharks and there's a category for tiger sharks, and populations of both of those species in the Gulf are doing well.
And those are two y'all that get a lot of attention because they get big, and you know, people, I mean, they got an oh wow factor to them as well.
Oh, they sure do. I mean, they're beautiful fish. They get really big. They're the most charismatic
charismatic megafauna, right?
Yeah, they truly are.
And yet, we've seen some big ones already, right?
And this year we've seen some big ones already. Just like Sean said, the ones that are on the leaderboards right now, I mean, they're going to be tough to beat. A nearly 500-pound bull shark.
Please put that in perspective, Dr. Drummond, because, you know, I always joke about this with speckled trout. You know, everybody catches 5-pound speckled trout all the time until you put a scale on them, and then they go to 2.7 pounds. But people think, you know, all sharks are 1,000 pounds. It's a rare thing to get 500-pound.
Oh, for a bull shark, a 500-pound bull shark or a near 500-pound bull shark is a massive fish. I mean, they don't – I haven't laid eyes on one personally much bigger than that.
Right.
And, you know, that tiger shark that we weighed in maybe 3 years ago is, to this date, the largest tiger shark I've ever seen. It was 1,100 pounds.
I mean, that's insane.
I mean, it was nuts. So these are very big animals. And, yes, they're long, but they're very girthy. They have a lot of girth to them. So that's what – you know, it's
and the tiger yesterday was a female, but she didn't have pups.
A female that wasn't with term embryos, right?
Okay. So she would have been a lot heavier than 750. Yet.
Exactly. If her pups were actual full term, that would have given her another couple hundred pounds of weight, because they just have so many pups.
But they have to, we'll come back to this, too, the biology of sharks, but it does take, not all, you know, all sharks being different, but Dr. Power showed me over time, too, a lot of these don't get to be fertile, not be, you know, of sexual age till they're older. It's not like some fish that, you know, start off, you know, 6 months in and they can have, you know, another generation.
That's exactly right. Tiger sharks, for example, they don't reach maturity until they're almost 10 years old, 8 or 9 years old.
That's crazy. I mean, in this environment, in a warm, you know, I think about stuff like that. If you were telling me tilefish or something like that, I'd go, okay, not a lot of food down there. It's cold and this and that. But, I mean, this is warm water action, you know?
It is, you know, but it just goes back to the inherent characteristics of many sharks. And they're really characterized by slow growth and late age at maturity. So in that way, fundamentally, they're different than things like red drum or trout. They just... those are the characteristics of that type of fish. That's what makes them, you know, that's one of the things that makes them a shark.
Is there anything we could take away from I'm picking at this, but we talked about that 1,100 pounder and the 700 pounder on tiger sharks, both of them females. Is there sexual dimorphism in sharks, like the females are going to be bigger than the males, or is that?
Yes, 100%.
Oh, it is true. Okay.
Yes, the females will almost always be bigger than the males.
Okay.
And that holds true for almost all of the sharks.
I'm just impressed with that University of Alabama education. What? You got sexual dimorphism. I'm very proud of you.
And if you ever came to the house, you'd see all the books. You'd see my bookshelves, you know. This is stuff I'm interested in. And, you know, the same, I mean, you see that, I mean, the flip side of that, you know, like in land mammals, people think, if y'all are trying to understand what I'm talking about, white-tailed buck is, unless something's weird, it's going to, same age, is going to be bigger than a white-tailed doe. I mean, so it's the flip side. In sharks, the girls are bigger.
Yep.
But one of the ways we know that these populations, when Marcus referred to them as being healthy, is because the rodeo has given us such a long record, long before we did scientific surveys, you know, which is really just late 80s, early 90s.
For a baseline?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, everybody says, you know, Marcus, I know, gets this question all the time. Well, how many sharks are too much? And we don't know, because we have no baseline from history. But the rodeo allows us to go back almost 100 years now, because the weights were always recorded. And the species, we can kind of put that together through pictures in the newspaper. And, you know, we saw sharks about this size in the 60s, 70s. But by the 80s, a 200-pound shark was a big deal in the rodeo. And now we're seeing, mainly because of the recovery in bulls and tigers, the weight is going back up, dramatically going back up. So, you know, that long-term perspective, you know, and the rodeo is the oldest in our area and in the Gulf, but we see the same thing in the Mississippi rodeo and then the same thing in Texas over shorter time scales. So, you know, the rodeo contributes a fair amount, not only to our day-to-day science, current science, but some history as well.
You know, we talk about recoveries of these species, and most of them people would cheer for. right? Most anglers are like, yeah, you can give me more red snapper, more speckled trout. I got more scamp. I got more grouper. We got, you know, more tuna, more kings. Sharks are a different story. It's a little harder sell, right, with a lot of people. And people say, well, why do we even need them? Why do we need them in our system? So, I mean, you tell me, why do we need them, Dr. Garman?
Yeah, it's a great question, and a question I get all the time. We need them for the same reason we need lions on the African savannas, you know, or grizzly bears, you know, in Wyoming. They're upper-level trophic predators. They're up at the top of the food web, and they maintain healthy coastal ecosystems. If you want to see an ocean that is in poor shape, take all the sharks away, and then you'll see what a very downgraded ocean looks like. So they're important in maintaining balance.
Well, because people will just trying to play steel man in this.
Sure.
They'll say, yeah, but the anglers are going to do that. The people are going to do that. They're going to serve, you know, at the top of the, you know, the Cascade or Troposphere Cascade. They're going to be the ones taking that.
Sure. And, I mean, I always ask those same people, you know, have you ever seen an example of where humans have interjected into an ecosystem and made it natural or made it balanced? And that's just not the way it works. These ecosystems regulate themselves. But it's very important to note that we are an important part of this marine ecosystem, too. So when anglers are upset about these increasing populations of sharks, I sympathize. I understand exactly what they're saying. But we are returning to a state with these shark populations that is much more like what it should naturally be. But we've changed what that ecosystem looked like because we like to fish, myself included.
And I always say, you know, rebuilding fish populations is easy. Just stop fishing.
Yeah.
Saving a fishery at the same time you rebuild a fish population or a shark population, that's the trick.
Yeah.
And what we manage is people, even though we call it fish management.
Sure.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, you've got to regulate. And that's the thing, the beautiful relationship y'all have with MRD, right? You've got, y'all are providing the science. Here's what's here. Here's what the species are doing. MRD has to decide, okay, how do we allocate that pressure that the human beings, all three of us in here being those human beings that like to catch fish, how do we do that? And that is tough. I mean, to got multiple levers there. You want to be increasing fish populations, but you sure as heck don't want to stop us fishing for a while because then the revenue's not coming in, then people lose interest in it.
No, I still get calls from people going, why is flounder 14 inches? Why did you make it 14 inches? Why not 13 inches?
Well, these are good questions.
And you explain, you know, I get nerdy and explain yield per recruit and all that other stuff. And
okay,
and
put that in homeboy language here. So that yield per recruit.
So there's a harvest that you should be able, the fishery should produce an average size that's above that legal mark if it's healthy, and that average size should take into account reproduction, making sure for some species that it has reproduction, or if they reproduce later, making sure there's enough of the population to reproduce later. So basically we want to manage the stock so it has the most natural productivity, so it can withstand the most harvest, because that's what we do as fishery scientists. We want people to harvest things. I mean, it's a source of protein. It's a source of economic benefit. But we have to balance that and try to really hit what's the maximum productivity. We always joke, everybody wants more fish. No, and fishery scientists are right there. We want more fish.
Okay, when we come back from the break here, get ready. Watch Sean's face, because you're talking about, like, compensatory mortality in the system.
Very good.
Roll Tide.
Very good.
Roll Tide.
As long as you're sure it's not depensatory.
Well, we can talk about that as well. Coming right back. All right. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. My compatriot, Mike Ward, is always on assignment for the rodeo, on assignment somewhere out of Port Fouchon, probably. And I man things back here at the Dolphin Island site, doing my inshore fishing and talking to folks here. 93rd Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. Coming up in a little bit, too, the president is going to join us. We'll talk more about that. But right now, talking some science, Dr. Dryman, Dr. Powers. And this interesting came up during the break, and this is as like, this is a good conversation because I am, like, I have a perspective, I think, where I'm interested in science, but I'm also a person who's fished here my whole life. And you already mentioned Jack of Valium. I've said Jack of Valium my whole life. What is it?
The accepted common name is the Craval Jack.
Okay.
I know. What we call them here.
I'm going to get, if I walk in my group here this afternoon as we're getting ready to go back out and trout fish and say Craval Jack, they're going to throw a beer at me.
I get it.
But we all know the fish we're talking about. I saw a pretty good one yesterday, Wade, when we were coming in to weigh trout. And that's a focus on jacks.
Yeah, one push 30, and usually it takes something a little over 30 to win.
And that's a stuff because, y'all, a 15-pound jack's going to bottom out a 5,500. You know, right. With your drag. So you start talking about 30-pound jack.
Hey, if you want to have a fish pull on your line, a jack's a great option. And so we're really fortunate here that the rodeo, that they let us sample these jacks. It's a really great opportunity. We're learning a lot of information. The more we learn about these fish, the more surprised we are. They migrate across the entire Gulf. A fish you tag in Florida, a jack, will make its
way. So they're kind of a pelagic, I mean, even though they're...
You find them out on the rigs. You find them inshore. I mean, they're an enigma. They're really interesting.
But so that we're not, there's not a population that sets up and stays there. We're getting migration?
That's exactly right. In fact, in South
North,
Florida.
North, south, east, west, where'd they go?
They move east to west, mostly.
Okay, so they're staying coastal, but they're moving.
Yes, the ones we've been tracking are. But interestingly, a lot of the ones we tag in South Florida, they come up here to the Northern Gulf, and they don't leave. So I don't blame them. You know, but
it's overbuilt.
They're seeing
there.
Declines in jacks in South Florida, and I think maybe those fish are all coming up here. Now, something really interesting going on there.
So y'all are doing the research. But I of course cart way in front of the horse, and that's something I like to do. Is that something to say? Environment's changing here, and it's more favorable for a jack to be here year round. Maybe temperature wise, heck, we see in snook here now.
Yeah, exactly. I think maybe there's more
permit here.
Yeah,
you know?
I think a lot of the fishermen in South Florida and the Keys, especially, are saying there's not enough bait anymore to sustain those jacks. And we know those jacks have the ability to move wherever they want. So why not come up somewhere where they just?
But they're saying they come. They're migrating it, but the data you're getting right now is showing they're coming up here. And staying instead of just like they come, because a lot of fish come here and then they're going to go back down, then they come back up.
Now, we do not yet see return migrations back to Florida, and that's a surprise to us. Maybe we just need more time and those fish to stay out in the water longer so we pick up those tags, but maybe they're just coming up here. Maybe it's a one-way ticket.
How long does a jack live, Crevel?
Jack lives to be just under 20 years old.
Okay. And they're becoming more and more popular, right?
As
species?
I want to come back, but 20 years old.
Yeah.
It's not red snapper country, but that's an old fish.
That's what we think of as a moderately long-lived fish.
Right? Dr. Powers, that's 20 years old, that's not every day, you know.
No. I mean, that's on the higher end, particularly if you think of something that you assume grows so fast.
Live fast, die fast, you know, party hard.
It's not that fish, yeah. So it's a moderately long-lived fish. And there, increasingly, we're seeing fisheries, especially catch and release fly fisheries, that are targeting these animals. And folks are coming to destinations like Texas, paying big money to go out and get on these Jack Craval.
Now, and you and I kind of went off on a side tangent there. Well, we started talking about it off the air about GTs, right?
Sure.
This is something I've been interested in. Just looking at, can I take a trip one day and go catch, you know, and this, y'all, it not just like, they're kind of like Jack of Valium. How close are they to it?
In scientific terms, they're in the same genus. So it's kind of like comparing two different monkey species, right? They're very, very similar. All you got to do is pull up two Google photos, and they look
Yeah, and if y'all don't know what we're talking about, like Google Giant Trevally, and you'll see far-flung tropical locations that have, you know, guides waiting to take you to catch this once-in-a-lifetime fish.
To me, the biggest difference between the two is you'll pay $10,000 a day to try to go and catch a giant trevally. You can get one here in Mobile Bay for pennies.
Okay, so this goes back. Y'all are scientists, but there's human parts to this.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to, you know, we talked a little bit during the news, why we don't see them the same way here.
It's interesting. You know, that's almost a sociology question, right?
Yeah.
Our culture has evolved here to where we haven't yet placed a real high value on that fish, but mark my words, 10 or 15 years from now, that will change. I can almost promise you that.
Yeah, and I wonder, you know, it's about the eating, because we don't eat them.
Yeah.
But, you know, anecdotally, I've told you for years, you know, buddies I met at the University of Alabama, Dr. Powers, roll time, that I would bring that came from other places, not here, and I'd bring them down fishing. We'd be tarpon fishing or something like that, and I'd get frustrated because we're catching Jacobalia in the slick. They had the time of their lives.
Right.
And I don't know why I didn't. It is a cultural thing that I didn't think it was. You know, I was like, oh man, I wish we could tie that line off on the cleat and break that fish off. You know, because it's getting in the way. But you pointed out the analog there is very interesting. Tarpon have no food value.
Right.
Right. We're not killing tarpon, but my gosh, do I? I mean, we jumped a tarpon three times yesterday on the boat while we were trout fishing. We were all gushing with excitement.
Yes.
I mean, it only lasted about 27 seconds, but we're so excited.
Hey. And I got to keep it down because I'm from Louisiana. Who's to say we haven't eaten tarpon?
Yeah, that's right. Y'all eat everything. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, if you get in
the we've tried a jack. It's not very good.
But we think about this, like redfish. All right. So redfish have a value to us, but I grew up, we would kill redfish and eat redfish, but there's a whole bunch of people that wouldn't kill a redfish, but fish for them religiously. I used to fish the IFA tour, and we weren't killing redfish. We were keeping them alive in the tank and weighing them in and doing that. So their value wasn't about the meat. So that is interesting. I mean,
but the tarpon comparison is really interesting to me, because think about how many times you go out there tarpon fishing and you just don't catch a tarpon.
Right.
Jack Crevalle, or Crevalle Jack, you're going to have a much greater success. Why not, mix the two?
There are already charter fishermen, charter captains here in Mobile that are booked up, and their clients want to get on Jack Crevalle. That's what they booked them for. So these charter captains are making smart business moves, and they're fly fishing guides mostly.
Right.
And people are coming from all over for a chance to get on them.
I mean, some of those snowbirds, that would be the fish of their lifetime, probably.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, to think about. It's if you come, you grow up here, we're kind of spoiled.
Sure.
Right? But if you come from Schenectady, New York, or whatever, or, Bloomfield, Indiana, and the biggest fish you've caught before is a 3-pound smallmouth, which I love catching smallmouth, but and all of a sudden you catch something that burns through the drag and makes 6 great runs and is doing loops under the boat as you're trying to get up on it, that's pretty exciting.
You got it.
But
you
this store this
but then I gotta, like, why the heck do I not I won't get excited now. Hey, I used to not get
this. This study actually highlights the impact of the reach of the deep sea fishing rodeo. Marcus has colleagues from FIU in Miami here working on that. He's hosted colleagues from all over.
Yeah, and that's, again, just kudos to the rodeo guys for allowing us to do that,
So what are you looking for when you're doing these samples on the next?
We're taking every little part and piece, the otoliths, the stomach contents, liver, fin clips, but really just from the fin clip, we can get population structure information.
Okay, explain and regular.
Yeah.
Give me regular people, Dr. Drummond.
Maybe we sample 200 jacks here at this tournament. Are all those jacks part of a population that stays in this general area, or are they part of a population that moves across the entire Gulf, or are they going on to the southeast coast of the United States, east coast of Florida and Georgia and South Carolina? We don't have a great feeling from that yet. Tagging is one way to get that information, and genetics through a fin clip sample is another way.
It's interesting, too, to think about these different migrations. Tarpon was one you mentioned, and I've talked to Dr. Powers about this so many times. And Mike Ward and I go, it just blows my mind. We had, growing up, you had this idea, all right, here come the tarpon. It's tarpon time. Yeah, they're coming up the Florida coast. They're coming through the Big Bend. I don't want to ruin anybody's secret spot, but there's a lot of areas over there, let's say a little bit east of Port St. Joe, where you catch a lot of tarpon. They come through, figure out, okay, then they get here, and then we're catching them on the beach, and then they come up into Navy Cove, and then you can catch them up by the Delta, late summer, and then they're gone, and they make this loop. And then we find out from the tag, some of them do, a lot of them do that. Some of them just leave Fort Myers and cut a 45-degree angle and go off, the mouth of the Mississippi at Venice.
Yep, so there's generalities we can make, but then there's always going to be exceptions. Not every individual in the population is going to do the same thing.
It's like
thing.
Blackfish, like triple tail. Exactly. Like this whole idea that it blew my mind with the research that I thought they went offshore, okay? Then they all come back inshore and do inshore stuff, and then they go back offshore. Well, sometimes, right? Sometimes not. Sometimes
they'll take multiple trips. Or they'll just stay out.
Stay out of the inshore for a whole season, right?
And one of the things that's really changing as the ocean warms is migration. We see that. We think we see that with Cobia, with more of the population becoming resident and less migratory.
Yeah, because they have a, like, east, west, and a north, south, right?
Yep. So, you know, I mean, that's one of the key things that this technology tells us. But the genetics is just amazing. I mean, they can now predict essentially how many parents it took to generate this level of genetic diversity in the offspring.
You can reverse engineer it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool.
So given this genetic diversity, how many sets of parents and grandparents would that have taken? So in other words, they can generate what's called an effective population size. We think from this genetic data that there are 25 million cobia in the Gulf.
Wow. Wow, wow. All right, coming back here at the 93rd Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Radio. Get this one. So the president, Chase, is in the vehicle, and then we're talking about waters warming, different species. How shocked would you be when I ask you, when are we going to have a snook category in the rodeo? We'll do that. See, now they're throwing stuff at me. We'll be right back. All right, so welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Right here, on site, at the 93rd Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. And El Presidente, Chase Farley, good to see you.
Good morning.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's still morning for a few more minutes. How you holding up?
I'm trying to get my voice back. I think I sounded better yesterday on the station, but yeah. Mustache the band got me last night. So
yeah. So this is, by the way, when we talk about what you know, we've got the planet's largest multi-day saltwater fishing tournament right here. Happens right here at home, y'all. Yeah. On top of that, these JCs are trying to start like Bonnaroo South or something like this with the bands y'all have. You know, it's the Dolphin Island Woodstock.
That's right.
But the presidents get to set the flavor, and any good husband knows do what mama wants.
That's
and
right.
She wanted 90s
she
country.
She wanted 90s country all weekend, so that's what we've had.
So there
I've
was
heard
a lot
Chattahoochee
of
about 8,000 times.
We should just get Alan to come down here.
I agree.
All right, so as we look at, I don't know, we're not exactly on the back nine, but we're pretty close to making the turn here.
Yeah.
Your experiences so far?
It's been unbelievable. South Alabama, Dr. Powers here, and Dr. Marcus, they have been absolutely phenomenal. I think we weighed 1,100 fish yesterday.
Yeah, I was telling Sean, it was steady and the most activity I've seen in a while.
On a Friday, for
on
sure.
On a Friday.
Yeah. I think we had 9 most unusual fish brought in as well, which was, I think, pretty incredible for a Friday. So we have a lot of activity going on. T-shirts are almost gone.
Okay, good, because I just had another text line question about that.
We still have stock. I think we got 2 colors left, but we might be sold out this evening, if not first thing in the morning.
Okay.
So
you got
baseball caps?
We got baseball caps.
All right. No, and I got to ask this before I even refresh it. So you have shirts, but I'm going to ask you tough questions. That's my job as an editorialist. Are they all like small and mediums?
No, we got some.
You got some
big boys.
Big boy stuff.
We do.
Okay.
We do. Yeah.
Because a lot of times you'd be like, "Yeah, we got shirts left." They said, "We have a small and a medium."
Right.
I'm like, "Do you see me? Do you see me? Do you?"
Yes.
Nobody wants to see me in that shirt. So you do have some big boy stuff.
We do.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So that's when they come through. You come through the air condition.
Yep.
And then you come.
And you can stay in line in the AC. So
that is
the tent is full. It's got great sponsors this year.
Y'all got a technical term here: a stupid amount of people on site for sponsors. This is packed in tighter than I've
We sold out. We are completely sold out this year. It's been we come close, but we have zero. I mean, you can look out there. We have no more room for anybody right now.
Right.
No more sponsors.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that they have the FM Talk 106.5 mobile command unit and my buddy Abe's trailer within about 3 feet of each other tells me y'all are parking, you know.
We are.
You're parking things hard. Let's talk about tonight, music tonight. What are we going
on? Yeah, we got Ryan Balthrop.
Mm-hmm.
He's coming to play. And then we're going to end things a little bit early. We do a membership party for all of our guys that are working hard down here. So we're going to end a little bit. But then we got, you know, way stations opening again in the morning. So calling it a little bit early. Everyone's hot. It's
it's been pretty.
We'll turn the AC on in just a little bit.
So. But for your anglers, remember Sunday, the way station
5 o'clock.
So
and I mean, we get super technical, but those people are probably on the boat right now. You got to be within eyesight. You got to be past the marker, right? But
you want to answer that in the channel markers.
In the channel markers.
In the channel markers.
Yes.
Yep. I'm not rules. Let this guy officiate it.
In the channel markers. There's gentlemen. JC's on top of the judge's booth who will tell them whether they've made it in time or not.
That's correct.
Yeah. So I forget exactly what marker it is, but they will be told. So they probably don't want to cut it that close. But for your spectators, Sunday afternoon is all you start seeing the big boats come in with the tuna, mahi. We've already seen some really nice
there was
mahi.
So what kind of, and I'm once again translating for the audience. So dolphin, and he doesn't mean the marine mammal. We mean the fish. Mahi is the right term. But what have we seen size-wise?
27 pounds.
That's
which
cool.
is big.
That's a bull there.
That is a bull. I mean, mahi will, the world record, I think, or the Alabama record, it's like 60, 65. So there's still a lot more room to come up. And if those mahi were in close enough where they could have, where they got them on day one, we should see some nice.
Yeah, I don't know where the grass. I hadn't been in shore, so I hadn't seen where the grass line is. I could see a little bit coming around the west end, some sargassum. I don't know where the line is.
And the great thing about how they set up the grounds is you can see the offshore jackpot fish being weighed. Obviously, everybody can see the sharks being weighed.
That was a big triple tail in there yesterday.
Yep.
I mean, a massive triple tail.
Okay, wait a second. So y'all, hold on. This is self-serving. What's leading blackfish right now?
It was about 20 pounds.
Okay, all right.
So I'm not going to disagree with the president, but I wouldn't necessarily call it massive.
It was big to me.
So that put a shock out to folks like me. Like, okay, gosh, what's leading right now? Yeah. But, of course, you can check that out on the
and you remember, online. People are bringing fish in from a large area. Yeah. It's not just that. So usually triple tail, they'll be coming in from Louisiana, usually.
What was that, 2 years ago or something like that? And I was in line last day weighing trout, and so the offshore boats are coming in as well. And the three, I think, biggest blackfish triple tail I've seen in my life came in. These guys came in on a Freeman, you know, like a 47-foot Freeman, and they'd been out of Venice or whatever. And we had some blackfish on the board, and we went, watch that and say, okay, well, that's over.
No, I remember that. It was like 34, 32,
yes,
31.
Yes, you do remember. It was incredible.
Yeah, and I do remember talking to those guys, and they took a beating coming back because they were cutting it close too. So same thing with redfish. A lot of the redfish, they just get to be the little footballs and as you move closer to Louisiana, just like me.
Yeah, you know, my theory back when we fish that tour too was that they, this is not science, this is, you know, me being me, is that they were feeding in those passes more on pogies and oily fish versus chasing crustaceans and burning more calories per calorie earned.
Yeah, in general,
is there truth to that?
Yep. So as soon as you can switch over to piscivory or eating fish, the more, think about it, I mean, energetically balanced, another oily fish has exactly what you need, whereas a crustacean and crabs are easier to catch, I mean, easier to consume and find, but they're not going to have the exact nutrients you need, and that essentially, yeah. So
that's why they got to be footballs down some of those passes I won't name that where we catch them.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, Alabama has some amazing productive waters, but Louisiana still, because of the Mississippi River, the productivity of those marshes and everything can be higher than ours.
You know, you mentioned mahi, dolphin here. I talked about a bull, and we know the littles, we call them chickens. Now, with science minds in here, the debate I've always heard is the in-between. And when people call them turkey dolphin, have you ever heard that? Like, it goes chicken dolphin, turkey dolphin, then bull. I'm like, we went from birds to you know, bovine in our judgment here. The in-between. I've heard, when do you say, here we go, science minds, when does it quit being a chicken dolphin? When does it become a grow dolphin?
It's even more complicated for a scientist because there's another species of mahi that's only gets small, and that's what really scientists call chicken mahi.
So there are different.
There's one that just doesn't get that big. I mean, what do you think, Marcus? 3-4 pounds?
Yeah.
So next time I think I've got a chicken dolphin, or it could be a chicken, I could say I have a fully grown one here. This one's a monster.
Absolutely.
Hey, I'll take it.
But no, it's going to be great seeing those you know, yellow fins, hopefully some mahi come in.
I got a text a few minutes ago. There's a big sword coming in tonight or first thing in the morning.
Excellent.
So, yeah, he's,
yep,
he's pretty
and
big.
Swordfish are a species they're allowing us to sample.
I don't think we've had one come in.
Not yet.
So, but I just got a text message of it, so it's
excellent.
He's close.
All right, and the sharks should be coming.
Yeah, sharks are coming in.
So y'all come on and check those out as there'll be keeps going on through 5 o'clock tomorrow. President Farley, thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Dryman, thank you. Dr. Powers, roll Tide. All right, we'll see y'all.
Go Tigers.
See you Monday.